Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
There's little things inside the game. But that's what makes a difference. And at this time of year, you can't make those mistakes. Because the team that does ends up on the wrong side of the game. Outside of those mistakes, the flow of the game, everything, right there, we have our chances and we don't make good on them. But just too many mistakes, little mistakes like that 2-on-1, penalties, careless with our stick, that kind of stuff is not good enough.
Yeah, not too much good enough on Saturday night. It is the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, good morning to you, Brent.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you were talking to me before we came on the air about your newfound real-life perspective.
Yeah.
You're not in sports funks as long as you used to be, but you're back into your sports funk.
As I was telling you, but the reserves are still easily tapped into. Like, I think before, sports funk was just my natural way of living. And
sports
now
funk.
And now... be a good name for either a band or like a really late night show in 1972.
It feels like a segment we should be doing. I don't know what it is, but
there's a funky bass line. Yeah. Like, bow, bow,
bow. Time now for sports funk.
Bow, bow. Okay. That's perfect tenor after the Leafs get smoked in game one. Yeah, there's perspective there, but the second I sit in it for even 5 minutes, it's just all the way back. It's like, yeah, I'll go home today.
5 minutes. I'll try 3 hours.
It's like, I literally just like, you know, some people are like, I don't want to go swimming. I just want to like dip my toe in the water, maybe read a book. It's like, I might as well just jump in the pool because the second my toe gets a little bit wet, I'm all the way back to it.
Well, here we go. Okay, so we mentioned it in the lead up, in the preview of this series that, hey, game one feels very important. But don't you remember game one against the Lightning last season?
Yeah.
7-3 loss. But after two games of the series, the Leafs had a positive goal differential because they won game two 7-2.
Mm-hmm.
All right, how's that doing as far as cold comfort for you?
Zero, because I don't think that's happening tonight. Unless Jim Montgomery is going to descend from the heavens and say, you know what, Swayman, why don't you take tonight off? That feels like the only path to a 7-2 or anything remotely approaching positive goal differential for the Leafs. Not to say they can't win tonight, not to say it can't be a solid game, but it feels borderline impossible to imagine a world where the Leafs charge back with a 5-0 win or even a 4-1 win or something approaching what we saw on Saturday night.
Okay, I'm going to make you do the hard part of analyzing game one first before we get to the easy part, which is like breaking down how the Maple Leafs struggled in many certain areas and which part of it is most concerning.
A lot of meat there.
Let's start with, hey, what are the positives? Sure. Are there positives you can pull from that hockey game?
Yeah, this is maybe not where I was intending to start, but I think it is informed that's the first place my mind goes. And it's a lot of what I was saying last year before he got hurt in the playoffs. I like Matthew Nyes. That guy is not unafraid of the moment. And I think part of it is that he is still a young kid. And I don't say that to take expectations off of him, but I say that to mean there's still a healthy amount of, I wouldn't even call it fear, but it's like there's the right amount of a governor on him. You see Max Domi right away starting the game, he's slashing Marchand, and like, I kind of loved all that. We'll get to that in a second. Mm-hmm. But it felt like Nyes was able to do the right thing of having enough emotion, trying to finish his checks, but not getting sucked into too much. I really liked Nye's game. If I'm going to pick one thing, one player who I saw and liked, that's the thing for me. I loved what I saw tonight.
That's good. That, you know, and I'm glad we started here because it's so obvious and it's so easy, again, to do the other part of it when you lose 5-1, when you give up a couple of power play goals against, when your goaltender doesn't make a single save. It's easy to point at the things that you struggled with when you went 0-for-3 on the power play. But yeah, if you're going to be optimistic about it, and why not? Again, recent history, just 12 months ago, losing 7-3 to the Lightning. And that was a Lightning team that you lost to in game one before you'd even won a series.
That's true. Different team
and
now.
Now you have, at least in the reserves, the idea of you winning a postseason series. It's not the be-all, end-all.
Do you think when they go to those reserves, they're like, right, Ryan? Oh, crap. Right, Luke?
Yeah.
Oh, man, he's not here either.
Watch the game, nerd. Like, just, like, the numbers aren't the be-all, end-all. But the 5-on-5 numbers...
big chart night.
...were beneficial. I mean, the 5-on-5 shot attempts for and against would account for the three posts the Bruins hit in the first period. Leafs hit a couple of posts themselves, including Austin Matthews on a wide open cage. I don't think you should count on Austin Matthews missing a wide open net too often in this series. No. But yeah, the 5-on-5 numbers, part of this is score effects, especially in the third period where they controlled the 5-on-5 shot attempts 23-3. But yeah, that wasn't a game that, like, if you took the goals out of it, which you can't.
Yeah, yeah, they count.
Where they didn't look like they were blown out of the water. Factually, they were, because here's the thing. Here's where we can get into the negative side of things. You know the biggest differentiating factor for me going into the series?
Yeah, I actually remember it. I thought it, those words were ringing around in my brain. I'll let you say it. But just so you know, I would spend too much time thinking about your defining factor during game one because you were right.
It's again, we call it hockey for some reason when it should just be goaltending. Mm-hmm. Like, it's goaltending. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I asked the Colorado Avalanche, who we'll get to as well. Like, it is goaltending.
Yeah.
Okay.
And sometimes the best goalie in the league, Connor Hellebuyck, lets it six and you still win. Weird how that works. Like, yeah, you're right. You're right. But it's like sometimes that happens too.
Well, also, did you see the goal right before where it's like, okay. But they finally held on. Yeah. But with like 30 seconds left, it was, I mean, there were some weirdo goals in that game too.
And everything about that game was made of weirdo. That's all it was.
Anyways, the Leaf game wasn't necessarily made of weirdo.
No.
You know what it was made of? A team built on goaltending, and they need to have good goaltending to win, because this is not a team, and again, 5-on-5 shot attempts, the total shots on goal in the hockey game, they needed Jeremy Swayman to be good. Jeremy Swayman was good. Ilya Samsonov, don't give me this, like, it's okay, he wasn't what cost them a game. Okay, sure, factually, I guess, when you only score one goal, hard to say that the goalie cost you the game. Ilya Samsonov, bad. Like, bad, not good. Mm-hmm. In no way was he good yesterday. That's the number one concern for me. Because the other stuff, you're like, you can squint a little bit.
Yeah, totally.
It can change on a dime. Hard for me to imagine the Maple Leafs get the better goaltending in the remainder of the series.
Yeah, again, the only way I can see that happening, and I should preface all this with, this guy's good too, but Jim Montgomery's just getting in his own head and saying, all right, here's Ullmark, which ain't happening tonight. It's just not. You're going to see him in the series. I could easily see a world where Swayman goes 2-0 in Boston and Ullmark gets at least one of the starts in Toronto.
You'd be nuts. You'd be absolutely insane.
I know.
The initial comments made me pretty bullish.
I think
Swayman starting game two.
Swayman starting tonight, but I do think remember what happened last year? They went Ullmark, and then they had to go to Swayman in game seven and he hadn't started one. They're not going to put themselves in that spot. So I don't, but that's the thing. The only way you get the better goaltending is Boston's goaltending capitulating right now. Now, I will say I am a little bit of a believer, and this isn't going to help him tonight, and Ilya Samsonov has to have a good game tonight to get the net for game three, what I'm talking about. But I can see a world. Samsonov feeds off that crowd. It can go both ways, but let's just go game script. The game starts the exact same way, but it's at home. Mm-hmm. And I know, insane, because apparently you're not allowed to do this, but he makes a save on a 2-on-1
for
the first shot of the game.
Mm. It's a nice shot, though.
Okay, sure. It's a nice shot. You still stop it. You get a 2-on-1, you save it, Bildin's chanting Sammy. He is such a weather vane in terms of the way things are going. Like, when things go bad, they spiral on him. But when things go good, he starts to build on that. So I'm not ruling it out, but Samsonov would have to go into the reserves of the best we've seen of him. We've seen it be good in the playoffs. Like, it matters. But it is such an elite, you know, top 5% of what he's capable of. And it feels like that Sunday morning coffee for these Bruins goaltenders. And there's no knock on that. One of them won the Vezina last year. You could, you know, he's not going to, but you could say that Swayman has been Vezina-like in the 40 some odd games he's played this year. So there's no knock on getting out goaltended by those guys, but you have to find a way to keep it somewhat close. The Leafs didn't lose that game strictly because of Ilya Samsonov. There's a million other things, but man, I am such a believer in game script, and especially with this team. And maybe this team isn't supposed to be this team anymore. Maybe Reeves is here and Domi's here and Bertuzzi's here and it's supposed to feel different. And maybe this is me and not them. But boy, oh boy, it felt pretty familiar when John Beecher snaps at home on the first shot you give up 5 minutes into the game.
I mean, first shot of the game, first shot of the second period.
Yep.
Go in the net. it's not what you want. Now that we're here, though,
yeah,
let's just get this out of the way.
Yeah,
Ilya Samsonov is going to start game two, but would he be your game two starter?
He would. I think if you go to wall, you create a sense of panic of then you're going back to Samsonov if it doesn't go well.
Yep.
If you lose both games in Boston and Ilya Samsonov was what he was last night, let's say he's no good tonight. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's necessarily going to happen. Well, let's just live in the doomsday scenario. It's Leafs after all. Why wouldn't we?
Mm-hmm.
He's no good. You go to wall. It's a reset. You're at home. It doesn't feel good, but, oh, you lost two games on the road. Surely that's never happened before in a playoff series. Of course it has.
The postseason series hasn't even started until a team loses at home.
God.
I mean, that's generally the NBA, but
no,
still.
You beat me to it. I was like, well, who was going to get to say it first in the playoffs on this show? And, win. Bingo. Circle gets the square. But, yeah, I just look at it and think you got to go back to Samsonov tonight. It's not that he deserves it or earned it or anything along those lines. It's just this is the best path to having two capable goaltending options for what is hopefully at least longer than 8-day playoff run here.
Yeah.
So you got to go Sammy tonight. And then if it doesn't work, you go wall in game three.
Yep. No, this is it. Because if it's a two-parter. You're right about the panic thing, right? If you start doing crazy, wild things, you really go counter to what I think was the overriding post-game sentiment from the Maple Leafs players. It's like, it's fine.
Yep.
It's not good. We didn't play very well. Mm-hmm. But it's just one game. We've been here before. We can bounce back. If you're going changing the goalie, that's your actions are not matching the words.
Yep.
And secondarily, Ilya Samsonov doesn't start tonight, you've lost him for the series. I truly believe that. Like, you're done. Like, if Joe Wall looks incompetent tonight, You're finished. Like,
we're having a Marty party.
No, we're literally having the Matt Murray conversation. Mm-hmm. If that was the scenario that played itself out. But no, you start him tonight.
Have to.
And if it goes poorly, if it's the same game script, even though there's no obvious goal, it's not. And even if you only score one, but it's another 5-1 loss playing out exactly the same as game one. Joseph Wall starting game three. There is no question about it. Leafs only scored one goal. You may have noticed.
I did. Very aware of that fact.
Yeah.
No, who got it? It was surely one of the massively paid forwards.
No, it was Div Camp. It was the fourth line who also allowed a 5-on-5 goal in this game, which we can get to as well. It's now, what, 8 straight playoff games in which the Leafs have failed to score more than 2 goals. Austin Matthews, the core four dudes, they had some struggles in the 5-game series against the Florida Panthers. It had carried over into game one. It was the number one prerogative for Brad Treliving this offseason. It was,
I think, number two.
What?
Meaner.
Yeah, okay.
No, I think that was
there was
one.
Snot, but I mean, he said he poured over the tape.
The first three guys he signed were, I guess, Klingberg, but Burt, Domi, and Revo.
Yeah, Snot. But also, like, with an offensive
bent,
I don't recall, like, Tyler Bertuzzi or Max Domi getting Selke votes, right? Like,
No.
Those are guys that are going forward that thrive in the offensive zone. Brad Treliving poured over the tape of the postseason last year and was like, these guys, they get this rap of being porous defensively. Mm-hmm. It was really just their lack of offensive punch in those 5 games against the Panthers that was the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Well, through one game, we're back to that old saw. And specifically now, the guy who scored 69 goals during the regular season, feel like it's funny. We were having a little chuckle about him wrapping up the season on a 2-game goalless drought. Yeah. But now it's like, what? Pardon me?
Yeah, I mean, Matthews, if he goes one game without a goal, I don't think anybody's sitting there saying he had to have one last night. If he goes goalless again tonight, we're having a very different conversation. If we're going to talk about secondary scoring for this team, this is probably as good a point as any. And this isn't an excuse, but it has to. You're allowed to mention this. The guy who was, I believe, their second leading point getter, who nearly finished on 100 points this year, just up and vanished from the lineup right before
the
playoffs.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, but like, if we're going to talk about a lack of goal scoring in offense, you know, that kind of goes part and parcel. Bobby McMahon, he was one of the guys we were talking about. And look, the Leafs didn't not score a goal in there. They didn't get 2 or 3 goals in that game because Bobby McMahon didn't play. But those are key cogs. Like, specifically, Nylander and McMahon. That is, depending on lineup configuration, at least one top 6 winger in there. If not 2, McMahon's a guy who's supposed to provide some of that jam as well. And again, like, this isn't, oh my God, they didn't have Bobby McMahon. Who could expect them to get 2 goals? But Nick Robertson's supposed to be break glass in case of emergency instant offense, not all right, here you go. Game one of the postseason. You're in. That was not how this was supposed to go. So, yes, point the finger at Matthews. And, hey, he had the good look that he missed the net on. I'm sure it haunts him in his sleep. Boy, certainly haunted me. Mitch Marner, didn't see a ton from him out there at all.
Mitch Marner.
John Tavares. You know, it's like the expectations have shifted. But if Nylander's not going to be there, you need capital J, capital T, JT, John Tavares. You don't need 65-point John Tavares.
Mitch Marner had 2 shot attempts at 5-on-5. Was the lowest rated forward in individual expected goals. Okay,
I we don't need to start here, but God, it was for such a lightning rod player in a moment with no Nylander, where you feel like, okay, this is really going to be your chance to thrive and jump. And again, hey, Austin Matthews could have had the moment too. Max Domi could have had a moment not taking penalties and actually contributing on the score sheet in another way. So I don't want to put this all on any one of those guys, but man, for Marner to have that game, especially with everything we talked about, and you know, it was I think the thing that's most frustrating about the Marner of it all is that it finally felt like there was a postseason that of all players, it seemed impossible, but he was kind of going in under the radar. He wasn't the marked man. It wasn't the guy who
played that game under the radar, too.
And he's still there. And it was just
avoiding radars at all points.
But you felt like that was a time where, okay, finally all the spotlight is not on him. He could just go play hockey. And you needed a big game from him last night. You needed it from Saturday night. You needed it from a lot of guys. So I don't want to make this just a Marner thing.
Sure.
But God, when you're missing your other, I guess not yet, but soon to be $11 million winger, you needed that guy to be special. And he wasn't special. He was much more pedestrian than special.
Yeah, you need him to be special, and you needed him to be special on special teams as well, which was... Boy, okay, I guess if you're just going on 5-on-5 goals, Leafs still lose the hockey game because they gave up 2.
Yeah.
But they gave up 2 power play goals and an empty netter. And they didn't score on a power play. I mean, the game is entirely different if they score on that 4-on-3 to start the second period.
Yeah, we're probably not having the conversation about the first shot going in even. Like, it's just funny how those things work, right? Like,
yeah. So the idea that you can flip the switch on a team that looked... like a joke, the last 4 games of the regular season, and there were reasons to understand why they looked that way because of the lack of import and the one not stated goal but implied goal of getting Austin Matthews goal number 70. Okay, the other part of flipping the switch is the power play, which has been, man, we had that brief glimmer during the 7-game winning streak where Morgan Riley departed for 5 of those games and Timothy Liljegren was running the 5-on-4 operation, and I'm not saying that's the number one reason why it had success, because they tried that again when it started going through the cold spell, but no, it's been months. It's been months. So it's one thing to be not so good on the penalty kill, which kind of makes sense, right? Yeah. Like, they just don't have the personnel, and part of that is goaltending. And maybe that's going to impact the availability of TJ Brody for tonight's game as well to get another penalty killer in there.
Probably possible.
It's like the penalty kill, you wish it was better, but like it makes sense, right? It's, boy, you should really think about making some roster moves this offseason to try and address that area of need. The power play makes no sense. It makes no sense. And it should be the biggest weapon this team has on special teams, but for whatever reason... come the end of the regular season and come the postseason, it melts down. It's non-existent, and it was on Saturday.
I'll go one further. You mentioned the start of that second period in the 4-on-3. That is where, like, if the belief of the problem with the Leafs power play, and if you, by the way, have the answer, Maple Leafs, I forget what the exact address is of Scotiabank, but just start yelling it outside of Maple Leaf Square, and I'm sure someone will hear it. So if you have the answer, that's great. But... I think a lot of part of the problem is overthinking, or it's looking for the perfect play and overpassing. When you have a 4, not to say these guys haven't practiced 4-on-3 all year. They have, but it's not, like, especially at this time of year, practice time is so limited. Yeah. The idea that Sheldon Keefe is like, all right, Nylander, you're out of this 4-on-3 drill, okay? We're just going to go with these guys. They should have been able to just play and not overthink it and just let raw, natural talent.
Because they have it.
Morgan Riley, John Tavares, Mitch Marner, 69-goal Austin Matthews. It doesn't... I don't care. clear who the three guys are killing the penalty. It could be Zdeno Chara, Patrice Bergeron, and a literal wall in net as the third guy. You should still find a way. So that is the power play struggles, as frustrating as they are, I think you can at least understand how, and it's not understand that you're accepting of it, but you can at least maybe get behind the rationale of an overthinking or the systems aren't right or whatever. When it's a 4-on-3 with just the four best players on the ice in that moment, you have to find a way. And this is the thing about playoffs is we do this in regular season games. We do it with to go back to where Marner first got hurt. He misses that, or he doesn't take the shot on the open net. That would have tied the game, and then the Bruins win 4-1. The playoffs have so many more of these inflection moments in the game. They score on that 4-on-3. We're having a completely different conversation. Maybe still about a Leafs loss. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean they win the game because they score on that 4-on-3. But it is a completely different game we're talking about. Momentum swings are so big, especially in a building like that. Oh, you could have flattened the crowd, and then 100%. They kill it. They score minutes later.
Oh, Bruins are ruining the three posts they hit in the first period. It's a tie hockey game. Yeah, yep. No, it was the game. It felt like not scoring on the 4-on-3. Part of it is, they also allowed couple of power play goals against. Actually, you know what? I want to go back to something you said about the power play just looking to fire it on net and not looking for the perfect play. I mean, to me, that's the entirety of this team's scoring issues when it comes to the postseason. And I go back to the six games against the Lightning. Mm-hmm. How many of those things? I mean, we're having conversations about Vasilevsky being beatable from the point, but it was chewed through his screens. Look at the two goals, two of the five goals, two of the four goals against Ilya Samsonov on Saturday. What were those? Those were like innocuous looking shots through screens that he had trouble seeing, bodies in front. Yeah, I mean, to me, the number one reason why this team has trouble scoring in the postseason is because they continue to look for the perfect play.
And I think the reason why it's so frustrating is because unlike the penalty kill, where we can sit here and we can be frustrated about it, but we can also sit here and look and say, all right, Patrice Bergeron ain't walking through that door. Zdeno Chara ain't walking through that door in terms of elite penalty killers. Okay, we understand the roster construction issues. It's not an excuse, but it's just a fact of life. Even if the Leafs said, okay, we have to get out of this overpassing, they have the personnel to play just to get it on. Like, if they wanted to, there's no reason, especially with William Nylander not in the game, and who knows if he plays tonight, why you can't have a Bertuzzi and Tavares net front, Matthews on the flank, Marner on the other, Mo up top, and then just filter pucks. Another thing is, it's not that you want Austin Matthews to be like a screen tip guy on the power play. Very capable of that. A very good big body who can, eat contact. And again, you don't want him just sitting there eating cross checks in the back. That's not the best utility of Austin Matthews. But guess what? If him and John Tavares like find themselves swap positions, both of those guys are capable of doing the other's job. So it's just, that's why the power play stuff continues to be so frustrating. And it's been a building narrative going all the way back to like when Tyson Barrie was playing power play minutes for this team.
I guess I would give that number one unit another shot on the first power play attempt. Like the idea that it's like, it's you have to keep those guys, you have to keep that personnel group together for a power play that has dropped from second in the NHL to what, like they barely inside the top 10 by the end of the season. To me, you do whatever you can to win a hockey game, and it doesn't matter. I mean, for Sheldon Keefe, he's losing his job. They lose the series. So, you throw whatever you think could work at the wall. But I mentioned the penalty kill and them giving up two power play goals against. This is also something that – this is familiar territory for Leaf fans, that you come out of the gates in a postseason series with some guys that are excited about the postseason. And look, we're a physical version of this team now. And, I mean, they can barely drop the puck for the opening faceoff of the hockey game because Max Domi and Brad Marchand.
It's hilarious. Both refs. Like, I've seen the linesmen come over and be like, hey, boys. You know, you do this. I imagine this is actually just like an impression of you at your house. Hey, boys, cut it out.
Yeah, knock it off.
You've seen that, okay? I cannot recall. And this is like a minute thing, but it's not. This isn't linesmen coming over to talk to these guys. This is both officials in the game. One, it's like, all right, this is, again, I imagine you and your wife. It's like, all right, I'll talk to one, you talk to the other. Right. It's like, you just gotta just divide and conquer here. But I've never seen that. Like, I've seen guys jawing to start a game.
Yeah.
But the idea of, oh, okay, it's not guys jawing. It's you and it's you. We better get in here.
Yeah, so not a surprise that one of those guys would take a penalty. It ends up Max Domi with the slash to the wrist. assist of Brad Marchand. Of course, Leafs give up a power play goal. I mean, I think the other example that cost the Leafs in this game is not something that puts them on the penalty kill. Mm-hmm. It's the Ryan Reaves trying to double up on the Joel Edmondson hit. It's like, yep. We just need one guy hitting hitting the guy is good enough. Like, two is probably unnecessary, mm-hmm. especially considering it sends a two-on-one the other way. But we had number of examples. I don't think the Matthews penalty getting his stick too high is part of this. But yeah, just again, too excited, too geeked up for a postseason game, I guess.
Okay, it was weird line I'm gonna draw, but I remember somebody asked, like, I think it was Sarah Nurse, was some PWHL player, and it was why, like, could you ever see a world where you guys are not wearing cages and you're wearing, and the problem is that they're just so used to wearing cages. Mm-hmm. So their sticks are up there at times. This isn't like they don't know how to play hockey. It's just like you hit somebody with a cage. It's very different than hitting someone in the face. It looked like the Leafs had been playing college hockey for the last 4 years with how much stick work there was. I understand how you get your stick up so much. It's like, mm-hmm. I understand it's a game. Tom Wilson tried to maim and kill Noah Gregor when he got his stick up. So these things happen in the game, but it was just so jarring to see so many, you know, the Domi slash is what it is. It's like, I actually like wish I could have gambled on that. Now that I think about it, it's like, that was the most obvious thing in the world that he was going to take an aggression penalty at some point in that game. The high stick stuff drove me nuts. It's just, you've all been playing in the NHL for a handful of years now. This isn't even a Matthew Nye situation where it's like, okay, well, the guy was in college hockey a week ago and your stick gets up, nobody notices. No, it was just so jarring. And that's not a, I think the frustrating part about it as well is that that's not like an execution thing, or you weren't. It's just get your stick down. What are you doing here? The penalty's frustrating. The Domi thing. Just let me get my little gripe in here. It's like, of course that's a penalty, of course. But you're gonna call that slash every single time? No, you're not. Brad Marchand looking at the ref, shaking his hand, and then going, "Oh, hand right up." It's gamesmanship. It's at its finest, and it's just, it is frustrating that the Leafs seem to never be on the right side of the gamesmanship and all this. I thought they were for a second with William Nylander. I was like, oh, what's happening here? They're playing coy and obviously he's going to play. And then he didn't. So there's no gamesmanship to be had there. But it just seems like they're always on, you know, if Boston would have came out and wanted to play that aggressive physical game, it seems like, okay, well, that's what we're doing. We're playing hockey here. It's like, and this isn't to say the refs had it out for the Leafs or anything along those lines. They just never, and I'm not absolving the refs and all this at the same time, but the Leafs just never seem to be able to find the right side of that line. It's like there was the one game against Vancouver before they left for Sweden, and the NHL said, oh, that's too powerful an elixir for the Leafs. We can't let them have it. They just never seem to be on the right side of these things. And I'm putting some of that on them. This isn't just a like, oh, the big bad officials are out to get the Leafs, but they got to find a way to be on the right side of that
line. I mean, spin zone would be that they're at point in the game, power play opportunities were 4-1. They end up 5-3.
You can't do the marker thing though, because it's like, yeah, you high stuck three guys in the face. Those don't even count, in my opinion.
I get it. I will say, like, human nature is, ooh, yeah. Leafs they were shorthanded a lot in game one.
Oh,
the same crew, maybe, you know. It's a bounce back in game two.
You think?
I'm just saying.
I don't. I think the Max Domi's now a marked man in this series. I think it's like, hey, you can't. For again, I
think he was a marked man going into the series.
I do too, but I think it's like, okay, this guy's a marked man. Oh, look at that! He hit someone with his car. All right. Well, they don't go, well, he did the thing we expected the marked man to do. We better not watch him. I think it like trains eyes on him further. And I joked about this heading into the series. Edmondson, for whatever reason, is on the other list. It's like he is on the guest list. It's like, oh, right this way. Let me get that velvet rope for you. Please cross-check Pat Maroon in the back as many times as you would like. There's just there's guys that are allowed and there's guys that aren't. And for whatever, I don't know what the rhyme is, what the reason is. Part of it is Max Domi being Max Domi. God. Like, we're not gonna be blind to that, but when you know you're Max Domi, you gotta play the game in a different way. And we all love the emotion. We love the passion. God, that video he put out. Oh my God. It's like,
that was a made that video? It was not like, because the Leafs released a different video.
I was talking about this with my wife. It's like, I think he has like a guy. Like, I think he has whether he has like somebody or the agency has like a creative person in house or whatever. Because Revo put one out as well. Now he like tagged the person who
did
made it for him. Domi didn't, which makes me think either like,
I don't know, like Max has a buddy who does that stuff or the agency or something. But yeah,
no, I appreciate it. That was a good one. God. I sat with my child watching that video.
Oh my God. I was,
it starts with throwbacks. I know. And the ties as I was in there. And...
as I was watching it, I was wondering, I'm like, what is he going to end with?
Yeah.
And then the banner. And it's like, oh, well, keep that banner around because we're going to need it next year.
Yeah. I don't know if we're making newspapers still, but I was thinking we if should. I was, if like I was in charge of the sports section front page on Sunday and I meant to check this, it would have been the image of Timothy Liljegren being thrown over the boards by Pat Maroon. And it would have, it would have been Leafs dumped in Boston.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Right.
No free ads, but yeah, Toronto Sun, they're usually very good at this.
That's kind of where I was going, but I didn't check. Maybe they did that.
This is politics, but I do just remember their two best ones ever, and this is not incited to my political beliefs, just makes me laugh. It was when Kathleen Wynne got elected, it was Welcome to Hell. And then when she got reelected, it was just Welcome to Hell, the sequel is what it was.
Okay,
it's
like, very good.
Great job, Toronto Sun.
All right, so let's talk about the biggest story going into this thing, the most bizarre story, but the most on-brand story. Maple Leafs play 8 seasons without a game missed by William Nylander.
Non-COVID. Have to throw that in because it's like he missed games during COVID, but it's like, you know, the sniffles and you get thrown in the gulag.
Yeah, the less said about that season, the better it be, despite the fact that it was your favorite season on record.
Again, it's just like people could only talk to me on the golf course and no one was allowed to come to my house. Pretty good. We don't need to belabor the point.
The only thing that mattered for the Leafs, really the last month of the season, but specifically the last 4 games, is keeping everybody healthy. They lost Bobby McMahon in an unfortunate play, and it feels like, well, he's definitely not going to play tonight in game 2. Mm-hmm. Kelly Yarncroft didn't play in any of those games, but he was injured well before when the games mattered more, and he looked okay in game 1. William Nylander, according to reporting, was not dealing with anything during the regular season. The Maple Leafs are not messaging this in any way, so the mind goes all kinds of insane places. Mm-hmm. But the idea that this would bubble up a day before game 1 of your postseason and that he still wouldn't be ruled out on game day and then nobody even seeing him in the building on game day raises major red flags. And then yesterday on the off day, he was one of the very limited players that did skate. Now, according to Chris Johnson's reporting... Mm-hmm. He looked a little stiff to start that. There's also reporting, again, that from Chris Johnson, that at the end of the season, there was no lingering issue. This was not a, like, guy played through stuff unnecessarily because he wanted to...
100 points.
100 points, set a career high in goals. There was none of that. He's the second leading scorer on this hockey team. He's the reason why you could conceive of 3 lines of scoring potential on this team, and it's not the, and Sheldon Keefe's right, it's not the reason they lost game 1, but this is not like, no offense to Bobby McMahon, this is not Bobby McMahon, this is William Nylander, 98-point 40 goal scorer, who's lost for game 1, maybe the series. What is happening?
There are 1, maybe 2 players on this team more irreplaceable than William Nylander right now, and it's Auston Matthews and John Tavares. And not to say Marner's not better than him, but Marner plays a wing, and if you like, you can get around this. But Nylander is the guy you can least of, even Morgan Riley, like, God love him, playoff Mo and all that. Mm-hmm. We see, what's the record? I don't have it in front of me, but they've never lost. They've never even conceded a goal, is my understanding, without Morgan Riley. You can fact check that? Thank you. But with the Nylander, they need him. In terms of where, I mean, my mind wandered a million places with this. I mean,
well, and you're allowed to, honestly, because the Leafs, they don't tell you anything.
Okay,
you're well within your rights. Like, we won't do the baseless speculation too much here because I guess we're not journalists, but we have like some responsibility not to be that reckless.
I do wish we were Levitard and had the just like reckless speculation sounder. And then
you at home, you're well within your rights because the Leafs aren't telling you. And I understand, I guess, why. We'll talk to Mark Recchi, who's part of the Blue Jackets coaching staff later on. And we'll ask him, I want to ask him specifically, like, what they really think the benefit of this cloak and dagger stuff when it comes to the injuries. But the mysterious nature of it, the like out of nowhere of it, and the mess, the like the non-messaging of it, you're allowed to think whatever you want.
Yeah, it is really odd. again, like, just like the mind wanders. It's like, did he want to go on the ice for the optional skate yesterday? Or was it like, hey, I better get out here to kind of try to assuage some thoughts that people have going on? This is as odd as I can possibly remember. The other thing about this that it's not a part of the Nylander thing necessarily, but it leads to where our mind goes on this, is the way the Leafs handled this. Now, I don't remember them in the past, especially in the playoffs, being super forthright with the injuries they had. Mm-hmm. But Keith made a point at the first availability of the postseason, so like after the Tampa game and the day off, saying Brad, or he said Treliving or whatever he said, but it was coming from the top that there are to be no injury updates. Now, again, I don't, unless you remember it differently, I don't feel like the Leafs were more forthright than other teams, but clearly they feel now they need to be more secretive.
Yeah.
I don't know what goes. I would love to have an explanation for this. I actually, to be perfectly honest, would love not to have an explanation for this about June, because it means the Leafs will be still playing. But the second, if the season ends in this series now, it's like obviously like Sheldon Keefe and Marner contract, there's bigger stuff, but it's like the whole end of season avail is what happened.
Yeah, 100%.
This is a guy, again, Mr. Iron Man. Only COVID has kept him out. Played in all the last games.
Yeah.
Played a ton of minutes in that Tampa game. And he's tweaked something. He looks stiff. Who knows? Yeah. It's so, so odd. And I think the problem is now that you've made your bed, in terms of saying, like, hey, we're going cloak and dagger, see, maybe he plays tonight and then this is a non-story and we can all move on. But, you know, for teams, they love to limit distractions at this time of year. And is this not a massive one? Every guy in the room, and again, like, I'm a little less certain about how playoff avails work, if they get to go in the room or if they bring guys out. But regardless, every person who talks to the media now, what's up with Nylander? Yeah, and it's like they know the answer is going to be, I don't know, I got nothing for you. Noah, it's the playoffs. We're not saying anything. Mm-hmm. But it's all these guys are going to be talked to about now.
Yeah. If he doesn't play in the series and they lose the series, I would expect us to get an explanation as to what happened here. I mean, I assume the thing that happens at the end of everybody's Stanley Cup run where it's like, oh, I was playing with seven punctured lungs and,
Patrice Bergeron,
my head was hanging by a thread.
It's actually Ted Williams was frozen somewhere. I don't know how I did it.
And maybe it's something as innocuous as, like, he had a sneeze, honestly, and, like, his neck was messed up or...
Eating pancakes, Dustin Penner style.
Wrong. But, yeah, the mind goes crazy places.
How can it not?
And again,
I would never recklessly speculate, and I don't even have it up in front of me, but, like, text line 590-590, your name and location. If you want to tell me what you think is happening, this is just for my own enjoyment. I will not be bringing these to the light today. But I have a feeling you are all very creative out there, and I would very much like to see what you all think is happening.
Chris Johnson was the guy most with the most information on this thing and indicated that this was not, like, because the first thing was, hey, this is an off-ice thing, like on an off day, he did something stupid.
I was immediately where my head went.
Right? Like, I don't know, playing a sport or whatever, doing something he shouldn't have been doing. And he said, that's not it. But I don't know what it could be. Anyways, it becomes less relevant if he plays tonight, and especially if the Leafs win the hockey game.
Yeah, I would love to not get an answer for this until June, and it's like such a funny little story, but I have a feeling that in about 11 days, we're going to be just like, answer the question!
Yeah.
The light will be swinging. It's like, it's weird. Stuff. Normally these guys are at a press conference, but it's like they're going to be in an interrogation room.
What a narrative it would be for the guy who signs the $11 million extension, has the little struggles right out of the gate, but then looks like his best self and then finishes the season with 10 games of garbage and then misses a postseason series due to mysterious circumstances.
Oh, only in Toronto, baby. Honestly, only in Toronto.
Fun stuff. Anyways. As you expect, more Leafs conversation coming up after 7 o'clock. But when we come back, Blue Jays with a chance to once again sweep a series and once again unable to do it. But they won yet another series against the Padres. Defense let them down a little bit yesterday. We'll talk about that and more next. As the Fan Morning Show continues, Ben Annis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Releases the pitch. Fastball chopped to third. Rosario picks it up, throws over to second, one back to first. He's out. 5-4-3 double play, and that's the ball game.
We got about 20 guys on our team sick. I'm one of them, unfortunately. Like I said, we're passing around a good sinus infection, which is not fun.
Ben, morning show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Ben and Brent Gunning. Pretty good outing considering Chris Bassitt is under the weather.
Blue Jays clubhouse sounding like my child's daycare.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, yeah, just passing around these infections sinus-wise.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Blue Jays had a chance to close out the series. Not quite as disappointing a finale as the Yankees series.
Mm-mm.
At Rogers Center, but it was right there for the taking. But they lose 6-3 in San Diego to the Padres. Bunch of unearned runs in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which especially hurt me considering I had both Chris Bassitt and Joe Musgrove to have at least 3 earned runs against each.
Oh, that's rough. That's you know, we don't do this often. That's a bad beat.
It's a rough beat because especially the scoring was changed.
Hey. Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, in Shai Davidi's story, it says 3 earned runs. And Chris Bassitt, in actuality, only has 2 earned runs, which makes sense. Catcher's interference, that's an error. But
yeah, it fits. Just because it's right doesn't mean you like it.
Anyways, Blue Jays continue to win series, which is good, man. Like, that's not, listen, this is not putting a damper on it, but it's another opportunity to really go on an extended winning streak to close out a sweep. Instead, they take 2 out of 3, 12-10 record. Again, like, under the circumstances where everybody's sick, that's pretty good. Also under the circumstances, you know the real reason they haven't swept these series?
What's that?
Is because they, like, the offensive explosions are 5 runs or 4 runs, right? Yep. So in the first 2 games of these series, you need all the high leverage relievers you got. You're throwing them all at the wall.
Yeah.
Your Jimmy Garcias, your Jordan Romanos, finally able to work on back-to-back days. Those guys are grinding you through some close baseball games with some great starting pitching and just enough offense. By the time you get to the 3rd game of the series, those guys are unavailable. So it's up to the Nate Pearsons now that Chad Green's on the IL.
Yeah.
And yeah, the Trevor Richards of the world to get you through the final outs of the series. Now, I mean, Nate Pearson's allowed to have a bad outing, but yeah, like, those guys are obviously not as reliable as some of the other higher end relievers on this Blue Jays team. To me, that's the number one reason why they haven't been able to complete these sweeps. I mean, go back again to the Yankee series in the 3rd game of that series. Part of it is we didn't know Chad Green was about to go on the IL. But yeah, they didn't have enough relievers in that game.
No, you're right. It has been something that's run in. They've run into a handful of times. And I honestly, you're right to point it out. I had just thought of that as a, you know, not lack of pen depth, but just running into it. But you're right. If you have a few more games in the early going on of this series where you can just, you know, throw use Nate Pearson because he's the guy who ate it last night. It's like, okay, Nate, all right, 5-run lead. Go clean up a couple innings here. Let's bleed this thing along. The offensive explosions just aren't there to be had for this team. I mean, you know, I don't want to go away from the bullpen conversation, but it's like Varsho's hitting and they still can't score more than 5 runs here. If you're going to get offense out of that guy, then and still not be able to generate more than that. And again, like, it's a long season, it's baseball. It's not, you don't want to put it all on one guy. And I'm certainly not putting it on Varsho, but this was a guy we were talking about. Like, he was the black hole of this lineup, but he's completely turned it around and it's still not enough to generate what you need to occasionally have an easy night. That's the other part about this as well, is just as the season goes on, playing and nail biting games, we can do the thing where, oh, by the time the postseason rolls around, they'll be ready. Or they'll be done. Just, you don't need every night to be the most stressful night of your life, especially in a sport where you play every single day.
No, eventually you're going to burn out your high leverage relievers. I mean, this is the
conversation. And yourself, just playing these intense games.
Yeah. It's good when you're one of the best defensive teams in baseball if you're going to play these games, but you know what gets magnified when you play these games is the defense. And if you have like one small slip up, again, for a great defensive team, it's going to cost you baseball games because you do not have the offense to overcome it. When you make outs on the base paths like they do in this iteration of Blue Jays teams, that's going to cost you. It's going to be magnified because your margin for error is so slim. All right, Dalton Varsho.
What happened? What's going on?
Do you know where he ranks in Major League Baseball, according to Fangraphs, when it comes to war?
I know you're going to tell me.
Yeah, it's 22nd.
That's so good.
You know who he's tied with? Mike Trout.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's tied with Mike Trout.
Bum, not even top 20 in war, eh? Mm. Shohei, keeping him afloat all those years.
Trey Turner also at one full war.
Wow.
At this point in the season. I mean, can he keep this up? If he does, he's literally an MVP candidate.
Yeah, because, I was going to say, good trade if he keeps this up.
Because the defense obviously plays now, I think you can extrapolate the defense to center field, and he gets dinged a little bit. Like, the war would be higher if he was doing the defensive thing right. That he's doing in center field, but he's capable of doing that. Mm-hmm. If he's this guy, if he has an OPS over 800, you are literally talking about an MVP-level player. Mm-hmm. Because he's doing it all then.
Yep.
Like, all the other tools are there. He's a good base runner as well, as we know. I don't know if he can keep this up, but here's the number that I would point to if you think he can. It's the chase rate. Last year it was 28.1. This year he's dropped it by almost 8 percentage points. He's at 20.6. This is the number one edict for these Blue Jays batters going into this season, is to have better, more competitive plate appearances, work starting pitchers deeper, get into hitters' counts, and then punish the mistakes.
Yeah.
That's the key. Punish the mistakes, which Dalton Varsho did on Saturday, getting mm-hmm. himself into a 3-1 count and salvaging an inning
yep.
for the Blue Jays. If he can continue to lay off those borderline strikes and they continue to be called balls, and then when he gets a fastball or when he goes hunting a fastball mm-hmm. on the first pitch of an at-bat and park it, yeah, man, you got something there. This doesn't feel quite like just a flash in the pan thing that doesn't have staying power. There's real numbers to suggest that offensively he's maybe tapped into something here.
Yeah, I think the chase rate is a really important stat to highlight there, and I'm of two minds of it. Like, obviously the first one is everything you just laid out, but we know that baseball, more than any, well, I guess football would take offense to this, but like more than any other sport, is a sport of adjustments throughout a long season. We see this all the time where a guy, a young hitter, will come up and he'll torch the league, and then they go, see that hole? And then they pitch him that way. He has to counter. It's a game of adjustments. And I think that Varsho showing that he is a different hitter now, mm-hmm. soon, I don't know that it happens, it's happening yet, but soon is going to be pitched in a different way. And is he able to stay within himself, having different expectations of himself than he probably had at the mm-hmm. beginning of the season? He would never say that. He would never say, well, I thought I was a bum and now I remember I'm good again. But mm-hmm. you go on a stretch like this, how can you not think, yes, this is what it's supposed to be like? So can he maintain that chase rate as he inevitably, should he keep this up, gets pitched differently? That's the thing I'm going to look for. But if he can maintain anything close to that, we're no longer having conversations about the disastrous Gabriel Moreno trade, just that alone. Could you imagine going back 4 weeks
ago? It's not
ago?
A disaster. It's just like, oh,
yeah, just like it's not the
bad.
Worst thing that ever happened to you. Like, oh my God, I'll take that right now. I'm sorry. Yes.
Also, I just want to, mea culpa. I guess it was fine moving him back up to fifth.
Like, yeah, probably working out okay.
Yeah, it's okay. He seems to be okay there too. The other reason why you should be disappointed the Blue Jays aren't able to complete these sweeps is because I do think the starting pitching is going to continue to be a strength. I don't know. Will it be as good as it's right now? Like, this is mm-hmm. the last turn and a half through the rotation. Yeah. It's been otherworldly. Yariel Rodriguez looks like a real guy. Mm-hmm. Kevin Gausman figuring it out. Jose Barrios, again, like, is maybe Nails. The American League Cy Young Award leader. We're not out of April yet. Yeah. I understand. Like, all caveats aside,
whatever.
Chris Bassett pitching through the plague. The plague, people.
I don't think that's what he said.
He is at death's door. Yeah, and it gives you a great opportunity to win the baseball game.
By the way, and like, hey, you won 2 of 3. No one's throwing dirt on you. But maybe don't go play Torrey Pines as the team is deathly ill. Justin Turner, Chris Bassett, Davis Schneider, yeah. and I think Big Earn was the fourth guy.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, I don't
worked
care.
Worked okay for no, Davis and
like,
Big Earn.
Hey, you won. You do whatever you want. But it's just like, this mm-hmm. is the like, oh, I'm so sick. It's like, okay, well, you're not going to hockey tonight, son. It's like, well, I'm sick for school.
Oh, my God.
I know. I feel like I just touched a
nerve. Oh, you did. Anyways. But yeah, it's all good for the Blue Jays right now, starting a 4-game series in Kansas City against not your father. father's Royals anymore.
Yeah.
Maybe they still are. It's early in the season. Like, I think.
Father's? That'd be George Brett's. This is not my big brother's Royals of like Alec Gordon and that lying Amish kid, lying Aaron Andrews. Like, my hand was not over the edge. It was right back here. Liar.
Everything's going well for the Blue Jays at the major league level. Things are going really well at the minor league level, save for the Ricky Tiedemann IL thing. Let's just put that aside.
I was going to say that's like kind of the leading item for me.
No. Alec Manoah even had a respectable start his last time out. 5 2/3, just 2 earned runs.
Gave us a great video of a man getting hit in the ball with a groin as well.
6 hits, no walks, and 5 strikeouts on 92 pitches. And the offense is the best in the International League, right? Like, the weather hasn't gotten great, and Bisons play outdoors, but Addison Barger, Aurelvis Martinez, Spencer Horowitz are, like, the most fearsome top three of a lineup in AAA right now, and Aurelvis is just hitting moonshots. Addison Barger taking a huge star turn at the minor league level as well. And Spencer Horowitz, we've seen it. I think I believe he's already a major league bat. But yeah, things looking on the up and up as far as the Blue Jays depth is concerned.
Very,
well.
Very telling. And maybe people have been getting them. I just haven't. And you're not giving it to me right now. Very telling how little Joey Votto scuttlebutt there is. And it's because those guys,
like,
it's
none.
It's because those guys are hitting. That's why. If those guys weren't hitting, do you not think, like,
maybe
Shai and Ben would be like, oh, there's a story here about, you know, an offense that needs a bat, what's going on with Votto? But there's just nothing to be had. And I think a lot of it is the Votto of it all, but I think a lot of it is that those guys are hitting, and it's like, Joey Votto. Those are actually sexy new things.
Yeah. They're not comparable, but, like, there's a real William Nylander thing happening with the Joey Votto. Like, what is happening?
Let me tell you, Votto. A lot about one of those things more than the other.
No. One's more important.
Yeah, Joey Votto, obviously. To you.
We'll get back into the Leafs and their quest to even up the series and repeat history tonight against the Boston Bruins.
Yes, that great Leafs history. Repeat it.
They won game 2.
You're right.
7-2 losing game 1.
I said 7-3 negative. I said I have perspective, and I'm a liar.
Our next guest is Mr. Positivity. Gord Stellick next as the Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.